Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. Today, we're going to talk some NFL draft. Yes, the draft, 2018 NFL draft coming up on Thursday, first day. So we're going to talk about all of that today, some of the USC prospects that are moving on to the next level. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's our email address, or you can call or text. The number is 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. Call or text that number, and we would love to get your question, read it here on the air, or play your voicemail on the air and answer it to the best of our abilities. All right, and we said we're going to talk about the NFL draft today. So I got my buddy coming on, really excited for this, John Middlecoff. So check him out. You can follow him on Twitter at John Middlecoff, MiddleKauff. He's a former NFL scout. He's also working with The Athletic now up in San Francisco. And he's part of the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. So you can check out his show, Three and Out. It's a podcast, so talking about the NFL stuff. So we're welcoming John in to talk about some of the USC prospects here in the NFL draft. What's up, John? How you doing, man?
I thought you were bringing me in to break down the spring games.
No. Did you go, man? Do you watch on the Pac-12 Network?
Yeah, I host a podcast with another podcast with Guy Haberman, and he called the Oregon one on Saturday with Ryan Leaf, and I was watching a little bit of that UCLA was tossing players out of the game.
I saw that. I taped it. I haven't watched it yet, but I saw on Twitter that there was a targeting and they tossed somebody out.
It's actually a pretty genius thing to do in practice, right? Just to get used to it, because I know you obviously go and all that, watch SC really closely. Every time it happens, one of these Saturday games, you freak out, but it happens basically. Feels like every game, so you got to change your style.
Nice. So you're working with Guy Haberman on that podcast. So you get a lot of Pac-12 stuff, because he does a lot. He's on the SiriusXM morning show. I think I did his show once with him and Ryan Leaf.
Yeah. So he's been doing that for a couple of years. So we never stray too far away from the Pac-12 and the West Coast. We try to. The fervor for, you're lucky you cover SC, so that's treated like an SEC team. But a lot of the other, the two programs up in the Bay Area, Ryan, 40 minutes away, 30 minutes away from me, I have Stanford University that's been in basically the top 10 every year for the last 6 years. And they struggle to get 20,000 people to the game. can you imagine if the equivalent was if SC football had been on their run, or Texas or Ohio State? Every year, top 10. Producing tons of dudes in the draft. They can't get a soul.
It's crazy. Yeah, I went to the Pac-12 championship game, which you could have walked from, from Palo Alto or whatever. And there was way more USC people there than there were Stanford people. But that's a unique place. You got two unique universities near you, Berkeley and Stanford. It doesn't get much more kind of away from the norm than those two schools.
And really, Cal, I grew up in Davis, and my grandpa taught at Berkeley, so my dad was a big Cal fan, even though he was a UC Davis guy. And we used to go to Memorial Stadium basically all growing up. It's actually, when they're solid, it's 10 times better atmosphere of When that place is rocking, it's way better than Stanford. It's a legitimate, even though it's kind of a weird Berkeley, say whatever you want. When the teams are good, especially with a football team, that place is a legitimate home field advantage.
Yeah. I love the new stadium, and UC Davis, man. I played in a volleyball tournament up there when I was in college. The Grad, that's a great bar.
Oh, it is. It's still going strong.
Is it? Good. Good.
Yeah.
I think I ruined one of my play days when I spent a little too much time with the Grad the day before the tournament or something. So.
You wouldn't be the first, and you won't be the last.
Well, so John, for people don't know, John and I go back. Well, we go back a few years, right? Did we meet at Mountain West Media Days through Bruce Feldman or something? Is that Is that how it was?
Yeah, I think so. I had been following you on Twitter, and you were covering. You were obviously doing SC, but you were also covering DeRuiter and Fresno State.
Yeah. So I did a couple years of doing that. And then, so I went to they were in Vegas, which is cool. I love the Mountain West media days better than Pac-12, you know.
I agree. you picked a good time, too. I mean, Derek and DeRuiter, they were winning Mountain West championships. And Devontae Adams, they got two superstar NFL players.
Yeah. That was some fun times. And they had a really good atmosphere, too. Like, my wife, I brought her to a game. It was like a blackout game, and she said she's a Tennessee grad, and she said that was the most SEC like she felt like. You know, it's like 40,000 or whatever it was. It wasn't huge, but it was packed and it was rocking. And when that team's good, that area totally gets into it.
I mean, some of those, the heyday of the Pat. I was a graduate assistant for Pat Hill for a couple of years before he got in the NFL, and it was after obviously the SC game, I guess would have been 05 when they took Pat or that team, you know, that ended up losing the national championship down to the wire. But that game, people still talk about that game around in the 559 at Fresno State. And I know Coach Hill never quite got over that loss. That's still my cousin was actually the long snapper on that team.
Oh, wow.
So it's still, he actually has a picture in his house. He's kind of on, you know, on that punt return. I think Reggie stepped out of bounds, but Reggie cut it back, and he's right there. I mean, he wouldn't even have been able to get within 5 feet of him, even though he was like 2 inches away from him. You know, it was just, that team was one of the better games, wouldn't you say, of that SC run, that Fresno State night game? It was incredible.
Yeah, it was great. And it's funny, right now, the opening arguments, actually right as we're recording, going on in the Todd McNair versus NCAA trial. So we have our Dan Weber and Keely Yura down there at the trial. They'll be putting up a bunch of content on USCfootball.com. But a lot of that Reggie Bush stuff is coming back because of this trial. So people are talking about that game.
Is he going to win? Like, is he going to get a lot of money out of it?
Yeah, everything I've heard is it's just like, yeah, the NCAA tried to throw it out, delay, whatever they could do. But it's finally come to roost. And what I was hearing is like, $10 million plus. He's gonna make money.
Wow.
So we'll see.
So he's not in obviously coaching right now, then, is he?
He hasn't coached since then. So like that's a lot of what the issue is they basically blackballed him. And all those emails and everything where they basically were trying to railroad him and make sure that he was guilty. It's all this crappy stuff that came out. And I don't think they'll ever allow email communication like they did back then, but they got them all. And the judge was like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. You know? So I don't think it's going to actually make USC look all that good because they didn't really fight it all that much. And McNair did. And I think he's going to win, but we'll see what happens. It's been a long time coming. So I'm excited for this next couple of weeks of the trial.
Yeah. I mean, they basically ruined his career and his life.
Yeah.
You know, and especially in a running back coaches, if you ever become an offensive coordinator, like you said, it's pretty easy. You just say the word $10 million sounds like a lot, but these guys, I know I had a buddy coaching in the SEC that was coaching running backs, was making like $450,000. So if you do that for 5 years, I mean, you accumulate a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, if you do well, you could become an offensive coordinator and who knows, a head coach.
And that's seven figures. Exactly. Yeah.
Crazy. Well, like, so we're like digressing here, but so, I mean, that's all good stuff. But we, you know, we wanted to get you on because if you follow John on Twitter, you can see a lot of the takes he has on the NFL draft, and there's just a whole lot of thought and analysis going on in there. And I thought it would be great to bring you on and kind of talk about the very top of the draft with Sam Darnold and get your thoughts on how you think the first, you know, 10 picks or something would go. But then also some of the other USC prospects that are, you know, projected to get drafted and get your thoughts on them. But I guess we could start off with. You know, Sam Darnold, people have been asking me a lot. I think I was really on top of it up until like USC's pro day. And I took that picture of Jimmy Haslam and Sam Darnold's parents and it like went all over the place. Seemed pretty likely he was going to the Browns then. Has anything changed in the last few weeks since that happened?
You went viral on that picture.
Yeah. It was
especially
crazy.
In Cleveland. That was a great shot. And I thought after that day, I thought Sam was a little lucky in the sense that, you know, the weather out here, it's just not that bad.
Yeah.
And you're playing, you got the Cleveland brass who the weather in Cleveland sucks and you get a rainy day. That's pretty ideal. I don't think you could ask for much better. And some of the stories that came out about they wanted to move the pro day or get it inside. Fans like, no, do it outside. And then after that day, when he was just slinging it around, it felt like he was a lock. Now, you know the way this draft process goes, covering a bunch of prospects over the years. Things just – the craziest part about this process is you get so much information, yet it gets – every day gets farther away to the last time they actually played a meaningful game.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, playing in pads is all that matters, not necessarily what you do in a pro day or a combine. But I think as we've gone, Josh Allen, because he throws the ball 500 miles an hour and he's enormous and his ceiling is so high. And like Sam, clearly a really high character guy, really, really smart from everything that I've heard in these meetings. I think it's kind of, not necessarily risen because he was already a hyped prospect, but I kind of expect him Thursday to go number one to Cleveland, which
wow.
is crazy because after that pro day, I thought it was a borderline lock and I just don't feel that way anymore.
That's great. So do you think Cleveland will go crazy? Like the Cleveland fans are like, oh, this is totally Clevelanding it again.
I think they'll get crushed. I mean, we've all seen the numbers. He's inaccurate, played at a small school. It's not like he even went to that small school out of high school. He had to go this crazy route to Reedley College. He was never accurate in junior college, wasn't accurate in high school. In theory, though, I get it. Right? The measurables, the talent. But I don't think we've ever seen, even if he doesn't go one, let's say Darnold goes one and he ends up going like three to the Jets or, you know, someone trades up to four. Like Darnold is a legitimate high level prospect. Played at SC, had a lot of success, won some big games, had some struggles, battled back, physically has all the tools, really young. Where Allen, there's just this massive hole. He's inaccurate and he didn't really win at a smaller program. And when he played the big boys, he looked terrible. So if he were to go number one, again, my gut feeling right now, I don't know if it's right. I think he goes number one. I think it's one of the craziest number one overall draft picks we've seen in the history of the NFL. It may be in the history, like baseball, we never really know the prospect in the NFL or the NBA. It's nuts. I mean, it's crazy.
So how does this, like, it's kind of confusing how this works where, you're right. They haven't played for a while. Their pro days, like basically the last time you saw them do anything athletic, most people thought Darnold was going to go one. Does somebody change their mind? Like, because they haven't really gotten new information really since that's happened. How does that change? And then is a lot of it just misinformation that front offices are trying to put out there? Oh, we're really not high on this guy. And guys like you that talk to these people, I'm sure you get lied to all the time.
You know what? And I tell people, like, I'm not necessarily like Peter King where I'm writing these big stories on talking to decision makers. I mean, I talk to a couple GMs, but the majority of guys I talk to, you know, are maybe younger, you know, regional scouts or even college directors that aren't decision makers. So they just give me their legitimate take on a guy because at the end of the day, they're not in charge of him or not. And one thing I think that happened, and you remember a couple years ago, when the Eagles were deciding between Goff and Wentz, they, you know, the owner, they went on this big deal and the owner and the head coach and the GM, they took them out to dinner and they spent a lot of time with them. A lot of time after the pro days, and Allen's pro day was, because wasn't Sam's on like a Tuesday or Wednesday and Allen's was like Friday.
Yeah, I think so.
And so at the pro day, you maybe go to dinner with him the night before. And then in the upcoming additional weeks, you know, before this Thursday, you've brought him into your facility and typically maybe not with a non-quarterback, like a, let's say Ronald Jones, but with a quarterback, you definitely, your owner and your head coach, your GM are probably taking him out to dinner. So you just end up spending a lot of time with them. And that's the one thing with the quarterback position more than any other position, that all the intangible stuff really matters. So that can sway someone. And I think when it was relatively close, if you meet Sam and Josh and you were on the fence and you go, well, they're both high character, really smart. You know, we have no issues with them off the field, how they'll be from a working standpoint and from a mental standpoint. We're just going to take the guy with the higher ceiling. That I could see that's how maybe Jimmy Haslam, John Dorsey, and everyone in Cleveland kind of can talk themselves in to away from Sam Darnold. It's just because there's other guy, and I'm pretty sure I've heard Jordan Palmer talk about this. Sam and Josh worked out together, right, this whole time, and they've become pretty close. Seems like they're very similar people.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I know Sam's a little more SoCal surfer, but Josh is from not that far away from the Central Valley, and it seems like they get along really well. So that's where the other two guys, like, clearly, you know, you've been around and definitely been in the same city as Rosen forever. The vibe around Rosen and then kind of Baker too are completely different than the vibe around Sam and Josh.
Yeah.
Right. Just the cocky, arrogant, which again, everyone is cocky and arrogant when they're playing, when they think they can win. But there is, like, you can't be cocky and arrogant 24/7. They don't want to hear about, I don't need a chip on your shoulder when we're just sitting down to have lunch before practice.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where I think, I was just clicking on Behind Baker. It's like the series that follows Baker around. And he's just got this huge edge to him, which, again, is a good thing. But it's just hard to wear that with you 24/7. You know, it wears on other people.
Yeah.
And I think when you see, like, the Bradys, the Mannings, Drew Breeses, they don't carry that every second of every day. They do at practice, right, and in games. But you have to be able to balance it because you'll turn people off. And I think that's the biggest thing that Sam and Josh have going for them, besides obviously their physical abilities, is their just ability as people to get, feels like they're just very normal. And that's normal in a quarterback way. Just they can relate to everyone. You know, Sam live with the middle linebacker, and they have for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, that's, to me, that such stuff is really important. Now, in fairness to Baker, I know some people at Oklahoma, they swear by him as a teammate. And then, you know, you hear different things about Rosen, for sure.
Yeah. We'll get into Rosen in a minute. So if your gut is right, John, where does Sam go if he's not going to Cleveland?
Well, I read this morning that I think Dan Patrick said on his show this morning that he had heard that the ownership wants to take Saquon Barkley with the New York Giants. For whatever reason, they feel scorned by the way they screwed Eli last year out of his starting streak. Obviously, they feel really connected to him over the Super Bowls. I don't know why. I mean, 37 years old, he hasn't played well in a couple of years, but they want to keep going with him. And that the front office wants to take, if Sam Darnold is there, take Sam Darnold. Ultimately, the one thing unique about the New York Giants is their ownership. It's not like Stan Kroenke, where the GM and head coach get to do whatever they want. It's Chris Mara, which I think is John Mara's brother, plays a big role in the scouting department. He's like the assistant GM. So if you're the assistant GM, but you're also the owner, you're basically the GM.
Yeah.
So if he wants to do something, if the ownership wants Saquon Barkley, I don't see, even if the front office is screaming for Sam Darnold, it doesn't feel like a 100% lock. Though I would be surprised if all of a sudden Allen goes one and you're going to take a running back in a draft where you can get good running backs in the second round over Sam Darnold. Seems crazy. But the Giants do some weird stuff sometimes, so I wouldn't be totally shocked. And that would leave, what would the Jets do? I mean, I basically, in every mock draft I've ever done, I just chalk up Rosen to them. But I would take Sam Darnold if I was them, just because he has a higher ceiling. So I'd be shocked if Sam Darnold made it past three. But we've seen before. I mean, once you skip a couple teams, you can just kind of free fall, you know. And when I say free fall for Darnold, if he were to free fall to like five, wouldn't that feel like a free fall?
Yeah, completely.
For a guy that felt like he was going number one the entire, basically since he declared.
Yeah, it's not like an Aaron Rodgers free fall, but it would be, you know.
Yeah, see, that's impossible here because he would never make it past like the Bills or Cardinals. Like, he would never make it past like 14. But if somehow Sam Darnold was there at like number nine when the Niners were picking, and obviously they would trade back or something, that would be wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't. I can't see that happening. To me, his floor, I guess, yeah, his floor, the farthest he could fall to me would be five to Elway. I just can't see him going past five. And even Elway, maybe if Elway didn't want him, he would definitely trade the pick to someone who did want him. But anything past, I would say three would feel a little crazy for a guy that would mean the Giants pass on him. That would mean the Browns pass on him. Obviously, the Browns have a second pick at four. You're not going to take two quarterbacks, and the Jets pass on them.
So I just got an email, like some latest odds. So Sam Darnold's still the overwhelming favorite at 5 to 12, but Allen's not that far behind, 8 to 5 odds. So he's pretty good odds to go number one still. So I mean, that wouldn't be too big of a shock, I guess. I think Barkley's the 2-1 favorite to go second, and Josh Rosen a 7-5 favorite to go third. But you think kind of Josh Rosen's probably going to go third almost no matter what.
If I had to guess right now, I'd go Allen 1, Darnold 2, Rosen 3, and then I'm doing a mock draft. I don't know when you're posting this, but it'll be out Tuesday. And I think what ends up happening, if the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and I read this morning that the Jets are basically, they feel confident that Rosen and Mayfield are going to be there. They like both. So it could be either or.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, they pull the trigger on Rosen. And that would mean, obviously, three quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3. Those teams that really need quarterbacks, I mean, they could offer Cleveland a lot, right? You know, a second-round pick and maybe next year's one to get that number 4 spot. And Cleveland's not a player away, you know, if Miami or Arizona, or even if Denver wanted to come up one spot and make sure they got their guy. So I think there's these quarterbacks go 1 through 4, just 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow. Are you like your part? So your podcast is part of Colin Cowherd's podcast network. And we've had Colin on the show, you know, pretty good friends with him and, you know, watch his show a lot. He's definitely not that high on a Baker Mayfield, who's, you know, one of those chip on the shoulder kind of guys. What are your thoughts on him as a pro prospect?
Yeah. The one thing I disagree with Colin on this one is just Baker as a player. I think he's better than he's given him credit for. And I know Colin, I think as Colin's talked to some people in the league, he's come around because you're not going to talk to many people in the league that doesn't think Baker can play. That's the one thing. Like, Baker is a legitimate NFL prospect, just inside the pocket, making throws. Just pure tape, just inside the pockets, making consistent, accurate throws and not turning the ball over is probably better than Darnold. Now, Sam does some more, like, just a bigger, stronger athlete, so can just make some plays of, like, breaking tackles and doing some crazy stuff. But Baker, just his tape, especially this year, was just incredible. I mean, went to Ohio State, and you saw how good that Ohio State defense is. They're awesome. And he lit them up like a Christmas tree. And I do think anytime you get arrested, if you're a quarterback, that's a legitimate red flag. And he did get arrested. I mean, he got tackled by the police. So that, to me, I have no problem saying that's a red flag. I just know this. I know I'm very close to someone at Oklahoma, and he swears by the guy. And this is someone that's been around a lot of NFL players. And for whatever reason, that I've been turned off a little in some of the videos I've seen, just like, Baker, you got to kind of just – you don't need to carry this huge chip on your shoulder everywhere you go. I don't think he acted like that around Lincoln Riley, around his teammates, you know, during the day, right? During game day, for sure. But I think he was much more himself. So I think the guy we've seen over these last couple months, you know, being – and definitely the NFL teams have seen. I've heard stories that he just comes off so cocky. And, again, that's not a bad thing. Your NFL quarterback is going to be cocky. But there's a balance to it. I think he's turned off a lot of people. Where even Rosen is more like – he's just more of a millennial in terms of he's just, you know, badgering you with questions because he's so smart. And his arrogance to me is a little different than Baker's. I would say, like, I do think Colin, there's some validity to he's not just a for sure going to be a great player in the NFL, but I would be more inclined to bet Baker Mayfield is solid than definitely Colin's take. I think he's going to be a, like what Case Keenum was this year for the Vikings, which was a really good starter. Now, obviously, his team was really good. I think Baker can be a better version than that for sure.
Yeah. People ask me, too, like when I got a lot of Cleveland stations and stuff calling me, asking me about Darnold before. They'd ask about Rosen, too. He looks more like an NFL, like kind of prototypical quarterback to me. Darnold's got that off-script stuff where he can just improvise, and people love that. But I think both those guys are going to be – really good. Do you have an inkling which one is going to end up having a better NFL career, Rosen or Darnold?
Well, if you said you got to put, let's say, $1,000 on one of them, I would put it on Darnold just because I don't think he can fail. Yeah, he might not be a great player, but, you know, how would he not turn into kind of Alex Smith? You know, just he's a really good athlete. He's got a good enough arm. He's high character. I just can't see him failing. Where I can see Rosen failing just because battled injuries. To me, his durability is a legitimate question. He has battled injuries. He's been knocked out of multiple seasons. In a conference, I mean, listen, I know you are too. I love the Pac-12, but it's not the SEC, right?
Yeah.
So he couldn't make it through either season. Now, there are other variables. His team sucked. His coach was not very good. His offensive personnel was not great around him. So you can argue everything. But just on tape, like you said, you just watch that USC-UCLA game. Like this year, it ain't even close. Like Rosen's the superior passer. He just looks more of a natural inside-the-pocket guy, which anyone in the league will tell you is more important than the ad-lib stuff, because the ad-lib stuff is really just a small percentage of what's going to happen throughout a game. You have to just be able to make consistent plays in the pocket. That's where Rosen kind of shines.
Yeah.
And just on tape, to me, he's the best quarterback purely on tape. But the durability thing, I really have big questions with. Like, to me, his personality stuff doesn't bother me that. Like, I don't think he's going to fail because of that stuff. If you tell me Rosen does not make in the NFL, it's because he can't stay on the field. If he's on the field and he has just a functional coach and personnel around him, I don't see how he's not good. He was really good this year. His defense, I mean, you've been watching UCLA your whole – how bad was his defense?
Oh, so bad.
I mean, they were a joke. I thought he for most of the year – and I know he made a couple key picks in that Memphis game, but they wouldn't have even been in that game without him.
Yeah.
He was awesome for the majority of it, and that defense was – It was an abomination. I mean, they couldn't stop anyone.
Yeah, the A&M comeback was obviously, I mean, incredible. Like, it shows what, you know, he's a guy that loves football. He's just smart. I don't knock him for the personality stuff. But, if you look at him, I think he's like 15 pounds lighter than Darnold, right? So there's, I don't know if that's something he can address and put some more weight on or something, maybe help with the durability.
And I think as he, gets into a pro system where that's all he's doing, eating the right foods. I mean, he just turned 21. Like Sam just turned, he's 20. I mean, these guys are so young, or maybe it's Darnold 21 now. Both these guys, I mean, they are going to look dramatically different when they're 25 than when they did, right now. Yeah, I mean, you saw Derek Carr when he was in college. I mean, you should see him now. He looks like he's huge, you just lift and you eat better foods, and you're not going to, econ class. It's just much more focused. All you're focused on is everything involved in playing your body, staying in shape, practicing. It's your only priority. Now, I think that's also a question mark. Is that a bad thing that we don't know if that's going to be Rosen's only priority? That's the legitimate question in the NFL, fair or not.
All right. Well, that's a lot of quarterback talk. So we'll go through the, some of the other USC prospects. Probably then the first guy after Darnold off the board would be Ronald Jones. He ended up at the NFL Combine injuring his hamstring. So I think he had a 4.66 or something like that on his 40 time there, because he kind of came up halfway through. Ran again at the pro day, but just wasn't. I forget what it was. It was like a 4.5.
I thought it was like 4.45 at the pro.
It was something okay. I don't have it on the top of my head, but it was all right. But it wasn't like, he's a speed guy, so you would expect something maybe a little bit better. Didn't show really good hands, in my opinion. I was down there at his second pro day, which is kind of questionable. I'm not sure why he would do. That's not his strength, I would say.
Did Darnold throw at that pro day?
He did. So it was at the USC pro day. Jones didn't run, but he caught balls, and it just wasn't that great. Then he had a separate pro day with Deontay Burnett.
Yeah.
And Sam Darnold was actually visiting Cleveland, flew back early to just throw to Ronald Jones, and it wasn't that good. He still had some drop problems and stuff there, but I don't think it helped him all that much. What are your overall thoughts on Ronald Jones, and has the injury maybe hurt him during this time from the season till the draft?
See, I don't think it has, because his tape speaks for itself. He can fly. I think you just watch him when he's healthy on tape. He's like a high 4.3 guy. He's a blazer, but he's a good running back. To me, the question is, with that type player, and I think a lot of the comp, and my natural comp always, before you really dive in studying the guy, you're like, oh, Jamaal Charles type player.
Yeah.
Well, part of Jamaal Charles type playing is being really good out of the backfield catching the football. We talk so much about Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley might be the best pass receiver, not just as a running back, but as a receiver in this draft. And anyone that watches the NFL, probably it's more than college, because in college, so many teams spread it out. They throw it to so many receivers. Where in the NFL, it's still two, three wide receiver sets mainly, beside your tight end, but your running back catches a ton of balls. Like, you look around the NFL, a lot of teams have a running back catching 50, 60 plus balls. I mean, I think Christian McCaffrey caught like 80 balls last year.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that new hybrid running back catches a ton of footballs. And Ronald Jones, that's why I thought Jamaal Charles. But then I remember sitting in my office watching the pro day in the rain, and Mayock's like, oh, that's a bad drop. You know, hit him right in the hands. And then you look, I just pulled up the stats, 32 career catches. And you just look at the stats, you go, well, maybe they didn't throw him the ball that much. But then, like you said, the second pro day, still not catching the ball. Maybe they didn't throw it to him because they don't think he can catch.
Yeah.
Which to me is a pretty big problem, because in a perfect world, Ronald Jones, you know, is like your second running back, that's your third down back, and can be your spot starter, like as a rookie. But you can't be a third down back if you can't catch. So to me, more than just his crappy 40 time, which you could just chalk up with a hammy, it's can he catch the football? You know, that's to me what every team's asking themselves. And I would say most teams are going to walk away right now and say that is not his strength. Then you have to ask yourself, well, can he improve at it, or does he just have terrible hands? And that's, I don't know enough about him to just say he has terrible hands, but most times when guys are bad at catching the football, it doesn't just improve, right, in the pros. I mean, it's usually one of those things that carries over. So that's a pretty big red flag for a guy that I thought, when the season ended, I was like, oh, this guy might be a fringe first rounder. He's not going the first round when he can't catch.
Yeah. So, yeah, you think it's probably hurt him. I don't know why, when you're injured, you would try to do it, because it's really not his strength. I think maybe he wanted to show that he could catch the football. And I think he got better. Like, he started off pretty bad at USC, but I think he got better and they trusted him a little bit more as his career went on. But it didn't really go well in either pro day catching the football. So I just think that maybe doing that didn't really help him.
See, to me, at the pro day, people are more there to watch him catch the ball than to run. Like, they know he's fast. I mean, his tape speaks for itself. He has years of tape flying down the field. To me, it's more just about, in this modern day, 2018, a guy like him has to be able to catch it. And if I think a lot of teams are just going to have him down as, he has crappy hands. That's not a good thing for him, because he's not, you know, your, like the kid at San Diego State or Royce Freeman, you know, your bigger, just true, you know, first down running back. He can do that, obviously, but I think teams would love him to be that hybrid catching the football out of the backfield guy. Yeah. That's not what he is.
The next guy likely drafted, I would guess, would be Uchenna Nwosu, the outside linebacker. I think I was at the pro day, and there was a lot of talk about the Chargers, apparently, maybe like a second round sort of pick. I think they were interested in him. But what are your thoughts on Uchenna Nwosu?
I mean, he worked out really well. I mean, anytime you run a 4.65, that's not going to, you know, hurt your cause, especially at 250. I think versatility. You know, is he a true outside edge rusher? Is he a guy that can do, you know, play some inside stack? I think he's a guy that teams are just going to work with. I'd be a little shocked if he goes in the second round. To me, a little more of a project, probably closer to third round, maybe fourth. Especially because if teams look at him like a true outside linebacker and like a 3-4 pass rushing outside linebacker, then, which I would imagine most teams are going to look at him, that's only a percentage. You know, that's not every team that runs that defense. So, you know, a lot of times with 4-3 teams, if they're projecting you to kind of be like, you know, a middle linebacker or stack linebacker, you know, your instincts come into play a little more and teams question it, and they can't afford, if you are, you know, a quote unquote project in their mind, they move you down a little bit. If I had to guess right now, like middle of the third round at the latest, fourth round.
Okay. The fact that he batted so many balls down at the line of scrimmage, does that?
Yeah, that helps. That helps for sure.
Okay. Yeah, he just seems to have like kind of a knack for, he was leading the country at one point last year in like passes defended as a linebacker. It was kind of crazy, you know, like you don't see that very often.
Well, anytime that you're 6'3", 250, you have long arms, which he has, and you put up the numbers in terms of you run a 4.65 and he jumped over 32 inches. Like, teams love that stuff.
The next guy, kind of interesting. I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about Rashim Green, the defensive lineman. You don't get on the West Coast, like in the SEC, you can recruit, you know, the 280-pound, really athletic defensive linemen or 300-pound guys. They kind of grow on trees there is more than here. A lot of times on the West Coast, you're getting like the 240-pound guy, and they develop into he's 275 and a great edge rusher or whatever. Rasheem Green was that guy coming out of high school, so one of those rare dudes from Sarah. Really quiet. It doesn't seem to have like the temperament of a crazy defensive lineman. What are your thoughts on
Rasheem Green? Was he a big time high school recruit?
He was. Yeah, he certainly was.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, like you said, it's hard to find guys 6'5", 270 that ran. He ran a 4.73. So just that alone, like you just put that on a magnet up on a board before I even throw on the film, I know I got a guy. And I've read and talked to people different second, third round. Typically, those guys don't fall far just because there aren't that many humans in the draft that, like, once you get a big guy that after the fourth round, usually they're a bad athlete or they have, like, character issues. But if you're a good athlete and you're that big, even if you're, quote-unquote, somewhat of a project, because he was an early entry, right? He could have gone back to school.
Yeah, he could have. Uh-huh.
That, some people are like, he should go back to school. Maybe, because he could have go back to school, have a big time year and be a first rounder. But like you said, if temperament is somewhat of a question mark, he doesn't always play hard, that I don't think you fall past the second round just because defensive line coaches, head coaches, and general managers fall in love with the size, fall in love with the potential. He's huge. And you see these guys a lot in the SEC, even underachievers. I remember the Raiders a couple years ago, this guy was the number one overall recruit, Mario Edwards Jr., and kind of didn't live up to the hype at Florida State and still went early in the second round. Huh. Just because when you're that big and that athletic, I bet this guy goes in the top 60 picks.
Yeah, I think he's a hard worker, and it came out recently that he played, like his shoulder injury was pretty bad. He had to play with all year. So I think he's a tougher, he's a tough kid, but he's just not this, he doesn't have this personality where he's really quiet and shy, and I don't know if you shy away from that if you're like, you want your defensive lineman to be like Warren Sapp or something.
I think sometimes you do, but the reality is not everyone is just this crazy player. So you just have to deal with what you have, and a lot of defensive linemen and offensive linemen for this argument aren't necessarily just your badass road grader ass kicker. Some guys are just kind of laid back. Now, a lot of teams shy away from that because they feel that when you take that guy and you get enamored with the size and the guy's not maybe wired the right way in what you'd ideally pick for them, that's where you kind of get a bust. And, this guy, if he fails, entered early, kind of somewhat of an underachiever, typically those guys, like his bust potential, bust potential, I don't think most people think this guy's going to be a superstar, but if you tell me he's out of the league in 3 or 4 years, it's not that, the writing was a little bit on the wall.
Gotcha. This one's kind of interesting. Deonte Burnett had a, breakout game in the Rose Bowl with 3 touchdowns and, really effective pass catcher for Sam Darnold. Not a big guy, another Sarah High School kid. Who was originally committed.
Always made plays, though.
I'm sorry?
Always made plays.
Yeah.
He always made plays. I mean, you couldn't watch an SC game without number 80, right?
Just yeah. Plays. So for him, he ended up getting a hamstring injury as well, and he also was at the Ronald Jones Pro Day. What were your thoughts, any kind of thoughts on him? We got to see him catch some balls, at least at the second Pro Day, but he didn't do anything at the Combine or USC's Pro Day.
He went to the combine though, right?
Yeah, he was invited, but he didn't participate.
Yeah, I mean, like a guy like him, again, like the tape kind of speaks for itself. People know that he can run. People know that he can get open. I would say just from watching him on television, I would think later round, like 6th, 7th round draft pick. But I'd be shocked unless his injury is really serious and people don't think it's going to get better, which typically something minor like that where you just can't run isn't that big a deal. I bet he's a late round draft pick. And the one thing with receivers sometimes is receivers that go to the combine don't always get drafted just because there's so many receivers in the draft and there's so many other positions that you try to get. So, it wouldn't totally shock me if he was like an undrafted free agent. Then all of a sudden you look, you're like, damn, you know, Burnett made the team for the Cincinnati Bengals as an undrafted free agent. Sometimes that's even better than, you know, being a late round draft pick. Sometimes the team drafts you with, they got seven receivers on their team, whereas an undrafted free agent, you can pick the squad. So to me, he's one of those guys that you're kind of keeping an eye on toward the end of the draft and as an undrafted free agent.
Another receiver, Stephen Mitchell, he was also invited to the combine. Had a couple knee injuries earlier in his career. Seemed to get that some of that juice back. I think he ran pretty well. Any thoughts on him?
No, no thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, he's just not a guy that we've seen a whole lot of as far as, like, people.
I would say this, though, because USC players just in general. Who was the wide receiver? Remember the guy that was always banged up, like Marquise Lees, like in that group of guys, Robert Woods, and just could never stay healthy. And didn't the Cowboys draft him?
George Farmer, is that?
Late?
George Farmer?
Or they brought as an undrafted free agent. Like, USC guys get a shot just because they're always, same with Ohio State and Florida State or just any of the big programs, just because typically you're a bigger recruit. So, I mean, that stuff matters in these draft meetings. When people say, you know, he's a 4 or 5 star, he was expected to be a player. And they just, those guys get a shot. And that's, you know, sometimes all you can ask for.
Yeah, there's some other, like Vianney Talmaivao or Nico Fala, a couple offensive linemen, Josh Fatu's defensive lineman, or Chris Hawkins is kind of interesting. He wasn't invited to the combine. Thought maybe he could be. He was a pretty productive player at USC. I don't know if you saw much film of him or any of those other guys.
Yeah, I mean, the example, like last year, I didn't think Zach Banner was very good. But what round did he go, like, fourth round?
Fourth round, yeah.
You know, I mean, SC guys, just they get some luck, you know, when it comes. They get especially the benefit of the doubt, because they're usually high recruits, and even if they've just played for a while, that means they beat out other good players. So if you play them – now, this is – you probably attest to this. I mean, what would you say? Last year, of the last 15 years, just talent top to bottom, is not one of the better USC teams.
Right.
You know? But still, I mean, it's still better than – majority of the teams out west, right? So if you're playing for SC, that means you'd be playing for majority of the other Pac-12 teams.
Yeah.
So they have a long history of guys that just play in the league. Maybe I know there's a history of some of those Pete Carroll years where guys maybe underachieve, like some of the receivers or whatever. But I think it feels like over the Lane and Sark years, a lot of those guys just stuck around. Even the guys that underachieved at first, like Robert Woods, who I love. I'm glad to see he's kind of resurrected his career.
Yeah.
A lot of those guys were really good players.
Yeah, we'll see. And it's funny, there's all the talk about USC quarterbacks. It's like, you know, they have a lot of guys getting paychecks. There's not like superstar USC quarterbacks. You know, Carson Palmer was probably the best recently, but they're still got guys that, whatever reason, if you're a USC quarterback, you get drafted and you make a team and you're making money and, you know, maybe you get a start every once in a while, but.
Well, I mean, what Matt Barkley, and Matt Barkley had like a 7-year career.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that, right? You know, I mean, once he fell the fourth round and then he was barely hanging on, I thought he had like a 2-year career written all over him, and he just keeps on surviving.
Yeah.
And I think Sanchez, it's kind of crazy that he got popped for whatever, in trouble for, I mean, he never lived up to being the fifth overall pick. But he's really valued in NFL circles and locker rooms. People love him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's something to be said for being just a good locker room guy if you're the backup quarterback.
John Middlecoff. Follow him on Twitter, @JohnMiddlecoff. All over the NFL draft. Really interesting takes. It's making me want to watch that first day even more to see, John, what is going to go down. Because if it happens like what you're saying, they're just going to be fireworks. It'll be so much. It'll be really fun. Like, I don't remember, you know, the beginning of a draft like that. That would be kind of crazy.
I don't think I've ever looked forward to the top like 10 picks more in an NFL draft in recent memory. And obviously, you know, we're biased, Rose and Darnold, West Coast guys, but just the drama of the teams, you know, is someone going to trade up? Is one of these guys going to fall to like 6 or 7? And again, I mean, it helps to have quarterbacks involved. It always makes a draft much more intriguing and powerful. But I think it's going to be.
Yeah, and I think the Saquon Barkley thing too, because he was killed at the combine. Like you said, I mean, he could be the best pass catcher in the draft, you know, receiver, running back, otherwise. you know, amazing running back. So you got this guy too. Does he jump ahead if you have a quarterback need, because it's so important of a position? It just adds to the drama.
Here's the crazy thing. The best player in this draft might be a guard. And so like the team that gets Quentin Nelson in like the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, wherever he goes, we may look be like, God, they got a Hall of Famer, like pick 10, you know? I mean, he's really good. I mean, there's no way he's going to fail, but he's a guard. And
yeah.
I'm not taking an interior lineman in the top 10. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
He is exceptional. I mean, he's a superstar. Yeah, I mean, you guys have seen him. I mean, just stonewalls people.
Yeah, he's been great. Well, John, hey, man, I really appreciate you taking some time. I know it's a crazy busy week for you leading up to the draft, but thanks for spending a few minutes with us, and we look forward to watching. You made me excited now. I'm definitely, you know, full board, just going to watch the whole thing.
Can't wait, baby. Fight on.
All right, thanks so much, John. Take care.
See ya.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.